The first time I feel your touch, it's as if heaven has graced me. My head is bowed. I'm dressed in the robes of the Lamb. I'm on my knees in the church nave praying. You stand before me and I feel your hand on my head. I'm so happy. I begin to well up. Your touch only lasts a second before you move on. But in that moment, I know I'm closer to God. I feel divinity. When you walk away, the deacons are on me. They grab my arms and pull me to my feet. I see you walking among the kneeling flock. I see you touch other women, 2, 3, 4 maidens. They are young and beautiful, like me, and the deacons seize them by the arms as well. They don't need to. We would follow you through burning cinders. But as I take a step, I find my knees are shaking. The deacons keep me steady, and I'm grateful. The flock continues to chant the eternal harmony. We lucky maidens are escorted out of the nave, through the chancel, and into a narrow hallway behind your holy altar. My breath catches when I realize the honor we are to be given. 2 of the maidens swoon, nearly falling when they see what lies ahead. The deacons are taking us to your private sanctum. The corridor to your sanctum is old, made of time-worn stone. Coal braziers burn on either side of the door, and we're made to stand before the flames. Strip, we are told. We do so, willingly, quickly. The deacons receive our clothes, our belongings, which are tossed into the braziers. The heat washes over us as our earthly possessions are consumed and the smiles on our faces are serene. At least, I am serene until I see that Catherine has arrived with the deacons as the 5th maiden, and my smile withers. Maidens are chosen for elegance, grace and devotion. But I know Catherine was chosen because it's an affront to God to hide her body behind clothes. Her hair is swirled honey, her curves are generous and sweet. Her gaze is sharp as she looks at us, the lesser maidens, and her smile becomes condescension. The deacons bring 4 black veils to cover our faces and 1 white veil for the bride. Catherine doesn't act surprised when the deacons adorn her wrists, ankles and neck with gold cord and lower the short white veil over her face. She walks, pert and proudly clad in firelight, to your door. And I fucking hate her. When you open the sanctum, you've changed as well. You've abandoned your robes and you stand, breathtakingly naked, with the elder helm covering your face. The black marble visage of the first god contrasts with your taut muscles, your erect cock and your hard eyes. You look like you're ready to punish the unworthy. I quiver, imagining what form your punishments might take. But tonight you have eyes only for Catherine. Despite our collective feminine nakedness, your gaze never leaves her. I feel myself and the other maidens shrink as you take Catherine's wrist and lead us into the sanctum. A massive bed with rosewood posts sits surrounded by candles. You take Catherine and lay her on the bed, and she writhes slowly on silk sheets. We 4 maidens in our black veils stand, confused, until you point to us, indicating that we should kneel. When I hesitate, you grab the back of my neck roughly and force me down at the bedside. You take my hands and press them together, then you hold my head down, and your cock is so close to my face I can feel its warmth. The other maidens kneel at the corners as well, and I am a little girl again, praying at Father's bedside. You crawl across the bed and pull Catherine, gasping, to her knees. Near the foot of the bed is an altar of stone with a velvet-covered book. You slap Catherine's ass so hard it makes the other maidens flinch, and Catherine cries out. Then you press your palm to her back, forcing her down on all fours, which puts her face level with the book. "Pray," you tell us, and we begin the eternal harmony. I mumble the chant until I hear Catherine's cries as you enter her. She is in instant ecstasy, bouncing as you plunge in and out of her. And I hate her. I hate that even with the mask I can see how much you're enjoying her body. I hate how powerful Catherine looks, taking your cock in wild thrusts. I hate how pretty she is, pink and flushing. I even hate that I care so much, that Catherine's existence diminishes mine. I watch through the dark veil as Catherine bounces on your cock, pushing against you like a good bridal slut, and the candles begin to flicker and wink out. Around the bed, the circle darkens, and you slap Catherine again and again, turning her ass dark red in the shadows. "The book," you growl. "Open it." Catherine, in rapture, reaches a shaking hand for the book. My voice falters, but the other maidens keep chanting. A gust ripples the sheets and extinguishes the candles. Shadows fall over the sanctum. Catherine is pale and sweaty in the dying light, but you look like a marble carving of the first man, your pelvis slapping against her ass. Catherine removes the black velvet from the book and opens the cover, leafing through it. She acts coy, running a manicured fingernail over the ancient script. She poses for you, looking back over her shoulder, grinning. That's when we see it. The dark forces. The arms of the elders. They reach from you in the night, like ropes of shadow, like writhing snakes protruding from your shoulders and back, shades of black that slither around the bedposts, the headboard, and around Catherine. We maidens see it through our veils, but Catherine does not. The shadow tentacles curl around Catherine's thighs, around her stomach and between her breasts. The maidens have all stopped chanting. We are struck silent, witnessing a miracle, a curse, as the shadows envelop her. When the darkness closes around her throat, she doesn't choke, not quite. Instead, she draws in a long, shuddering breath. Her fingers and toes curl and her eyes go wide. People refer to the air as nothing, but to breathe nothing, to fill your lungs genuinely with nothing, is truly horrifying. You growl and bury yourself in Catherine as she begins to thrash, hovering in the clutches of the shadows. Her eyes go white, not rolling into the back of her head. They turn true white, as if the elder god has taken her sight. She claws at her face with manicured nails, leaving long scratches that weep blood. You huff and grunt behind the mask, and I can tell you're close. Your hands dig into Catherine's hips. Your cock hammering makes her toned flesh bounce. She screams, and her horror is swallowed by the black void that has entangled her. I hear your laughter, booming as you spend your seed inside Catherine, and her limbs begin to shudder. I reach down with one hand, very slowly, and stroke my clit as I watch Catherine being taken by forces dark and powerful and ancient. It's past midnight when we're driven home by the deacons. Catherine is taken first to the hospital, but we all know where she'll end up before the week is out. Ivy Hills Asylum is less than 10 miles from the church. Sometimes I think there's providence in that, or just prudent planning. The deacons warn us not to speak about anything we've seen. We're told to stay faithful and to keep our bodies pure and ready for your touch. I don't need to be told. I know exactly what and who my body is for. You'll need a new bride now that Catherine is gone. Over the course of the next week, I visit the three remaining maidens. They are giddy and frightened and elated and reverent by turns. They're torn between their attraction to your power and their fear of the thing we saw reaching through you. I nod in agreement with them and I humour their nattering. After our visits, I leave each of them with a pledge that no matter what happens, we'll all stay friends. A pinky promise like sisters to remain devoted to each other. I smile, I nod, I make promises. And every maiden suffers a terrible accident after our visit. Except me. The deacons are furious when they pick me up on Sunday, but they aren't surprised. Maiden Cynthia took a nasty spill on the stairs, which sent her to the hospital. Maiden Terry drank bad wine. Maiden Sarah has gone missing, although her car is in the garage. And that leaves me, your only bride, by the time Sunday services have ended. Your sermon goes on for hours. You preach hellfire and damnation, eternities and infinities. You are powerful, eloquent, emotional, evocative. I touch myself frequently throughout your sermon. I make sure you see it too, and you lick your lips as the service comes to an end. The deacons select new maidens from the flock. They are young, bright-eyed, and beautiful. They swoon when you touch their heads, and they are escorted by the deacons. I follow with a deacon at each elbow, but I move with purpose. The new maidens are stripped before the sanctum, and the fire reveals their awe. I disrobe as I walk, and I toss my things on the crackling brazier. The deacons give the maidens their black veils. For me, the white, with gold cords placed around my ankles, wrists, and neck. I wait before your sanctum, naked and eager, while the maidens titter behind me. I feel poised and polished until you open the door. When I see you, I am undone. You are naked, save for the black marble mask and an erection that looks like it could pierce plate aluminium. Your cock is so beautiful, so perfect, that I need to fall to my knees and worship it now. You see my gaze, my fixation, and you grin. I hold up my arm, expecting you to take me by the wrist, but you don't. Instead, you walk around me, inspecting me and the other maidens like a breeder inspecting livestock he might purchase. You linger on the new girls, getting close enough to sniff their hair, check the colour of their eyes, and at one point brush your cock across one of their asses. Finally, you come to me. You stand in front of me, your erection aimed at my abdomen, and I see your eyes glimmer behind the mask. You seize my wrist and pull me along toward the four-poster bed, and I am smiling despite my frustration. You guide me to the bed where I'm to prostrate myself, and you instruct the maidens to kneel at the bedside and begin their prayers. Then you crawl over the silk to join me, and you find me laying on my belly, ankles crossed in the air like a teenager on the telephone. I glance over my shoulder and I watch you. I'm not smiling. I'm not coy. This is not a game to me like it was for Catherine. She was given something that you are withholding, and this is my tiny, rebellious way of demanding the same treatment, the same cruelty. You register my little act of defiance and respond with the appropriate paternal correction. You scoop me up, lay me across your lap, and spank me like a petulant child. Your night with Catherine was special. You reached into the ancient, the forbidden, and part of that, I'm sure, hinged upon the pain you inflicted on her. Thus, I should be given the same pain before we start, or so my logic holds. However, when you begin to strike me, I realize I may have been too free in my invitation. You treat me like a child, but you don't spank me like one. Your hand is calloused and hard, and your arms are corded. Your first volley makes my eyes glow red and brings tears to my eyes. The next 10 drive the breath from me. I fall fully across your lap and your erection presses hard into my belly. I wriggle. I cry. I beg. I lose count after 20 slaps, so I start counting again in my head and I lose track after another 20. So much time passes, and you are so thorough in your beating that my entire backside is hot, pulsing pain by the time you're done. I have soaked your sheets in tears, and I've left your legs wet where I wriggled across your lap. Just when I'm able to stifle my sobs, you haul me up on my hands and knees like Catherine, and I feel the head of your cock resting between my cunt lips. That's when you ask me, "Are you ready, child?" I don't trust my voice, so I nod. I think back on how wanton, how shameless Catherine acted when you took her screams, her ecstasy. I thought it was an act. When you enter me and I feel myself stretching to accommodate you, I know it wasn't. It isn't the bestial way you move. It isn't the power you wield or the hardness of your body or your cock. It's your spirit. You thrust into me with an eagerness that speaks of joy and desperation. You take me, claim me, as one who is hanging from the cliff of mortality, and I am the fruit you pluck before you fall. I've already screamed my voice hoarse during your spanking. Now my cries of lust are throaty, and I embarrass myself with little yelps as our flesh slaps together and I feel your cock filling me. I clench and I wriggle and I instinctively crawl away, but you pull me back. You always pull me back, like a compass coming to true. My legs begin to shake, my arms buckle, and you let me fall into the mattress, eyes and mouth wide, while you hold my hips and bury yourself in me. Then you say the words that I've been imagining all week, the words I've obsessed over since I saw the shadows. But I'm so deep in my shameless lust, you have to repeat yourself before my mind can surface. "The book," you say. "Open it." I reach for the altar at the foot of the bed, and I peel back the black velvet. Underneath is a book of simple calfskin binding with uniform yellowed pages. I open the book to the inside cover and I moan as I feel you slowing your pace. You're close to coming. I can feel you're close, and you're breathing heavier than when you fucked Catherine. That, more than anything, makes me smile as I look at the ancient pages. The words are written in neat columns, but they're in no language that I recognise. Indeed, I don't know that anyone on earth could recognise them. But they speak to me, nonetheless. As you fuck me, I see a story, the oldest story, shaping in my mind, in our minds, an interplay of light and dark, a dance of entropy and creation, the coupling of primal man and first woman. I see creation. I see pregnant eternity. And I feel the friction and the war of power within me right now, within the pleasure and the seed of your vigorous fucking. Unlike Catherine, I see the shadows that emerge from you when the candles go dark. I see the shades of the god, the ancient one who derives its pleasure through you as you take your pleasure from me. Also, unlike Catherine, I embrace both man and darkness. I moan and I wriggle in the grip of those shadows. I spread my legs for them. I welcome them. I breathe it in and the void fills my throat. I open myself and they enter my every hole, lifting me high above the bed, weightless and twitching as you plunge into me again and again. I can't breathe, can't think. I'm reduced to a vessel for your greed, and I shudder on the edge of blissful, orgasmic unconsciousness. You caress and squeeze and nibble my flesh, rapacious, and I hear you grunting as you approach the precipice. I am soft and warm and floating before you, and you unleash yourself into me, coming as I wriggle helpless on your cock, suspended by night-given form for your pleasure. And that is when I lose myself. I come at the edge of sanity, desperate for air. I quake and shiver until I see stars. I shake and gasp until white pinpoints appear in my vision, except the stars never leave my eyes. The dance above the bed, as if my pleasure has summoned the cosmos above your sanctuary. I wait for your release to end. I feel your seed filling me. I feel your body stiffen, and you pull away from me. But the roar in my head only grows. The shadows around me mount, thicken, until I am cocooned in flicking darkness. I open my mouth to ask why. Why? I was a good girl. I was much better than Catherine. I did everything you asked. I accepted you and the darkness with abandon. But my words are swallowed by nothing. I breathe nothing. I am invaded by dark nothingness. My eyes go white. My limbs shake. I curl, fetal in the air, until I feel my body fading. I am fading. The last thing I see before my vision fades, before my mind flees, is the black marble mask, the elder helm, laughing at my folly.